This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Had a great time on Friday at Assumption Parish in South County. We'll do it all again on Friday of this week. In fact, I think Ethan's just knocked down the locked in the roundtable panel. Jane will be back, State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, and Jeff Rainford, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Slate. Look, we're a week away. I was thinking about this. Actually, truth be told, I think about it every day when I come into downtown, that we're counting the days and maybe the hours now when Tashar Jones will not be the mayor. It is disgusting to me. I've threatened to do this for a while, and I'll have to see if I actually do it because I'm afraid I might get arrested. But it's a very big pet peeve of mine for those of you who come down to Enterprise Center or you know the area around City Hall. We're only about two blocks from there. And they, a year and a half ago when Kamala Harris came to town in 2023, a year and a half ago in October, they put these, you know, gates around Pelker Park, which is located just to the south of where I'm sitting right now. And they put them around City Hall and the courts building as well because all the homeless encampments were there. But they haven't opened it back up. Like, no one's taken those gates down. I don't know what it's going to take. They claimed, because I had to do a Freedom of Information request, the parks director and others claimed that they were doing repairs to the grass at Pelker Park. But I bring it up, and the reason it's a pet peeve of mine, it's very symbolic of the failure of this administration and this city. Having those gates up there for a year and a half, eventually they'll come down. I think I might, next Tuesday, when Tashar loses, I think I might just go around and take him down, see if I get arrested. It'd be good radio if I do get arrested. All right, let's talk a little sports here with Tom Ackerman from down the hall at the KMOX side of the building. He's the KMOX sports director, also on the Cardinals radio network, and he does so much more. Hi, Tommy. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great, buddy. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm a little nervous about this baseball season, but before I get to that, let me get your thoughts on hoops. Illinois goes out this weekend. Mizzou, of course, does the Mizzou thing. What the hell happened to them? Let's start there. What do you think happened there?
Yeah, it was a bummer. I mean, they went up against a good team. That was a bad matchup for them, I felt. You know, Missouri thrives on transition. They thrive on, like, an up-and-down game, mistakes being made by the other team and feasting on them. And Drake doesn't like either of those things. Drake likes to play efficient offense. They like to run the clock down, and then they bury you with a good pass inside, or they hit a three from the outside, and they're very well coached. Ben McCollum actually just got the Iowa job.
Yeah, I saw
that. Officially today. So, you know, they're a really good team, and I thought it was a bad matchup for Missouri. Missouri did not play well down the stretch. I mean, their defense was lacking. They were living and dying by the three, and if those threes don't go down, Mizzou isn't very good. I thought that Illinois, you know, when they're really good, they're scary good, and sometimes they can be unpredictable. They were a little bit in between yesterday against a really good Kentucky team, and it's no shame in losing to Kentucky. You just wish that Illinois could have a little more consistency. But, you know, the name of the college game today, it's difficult to do. I'm not making an excuse for them, but when you change over that many people from year to year, you've got to get the right mix and chemistry. And I always felt like Illinois was a good team, but not great. They at times, again, look like a killer, but if you don't have everybody playing on the same page all the time and everybody healthy,
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. You know, you can't get it done.
Well, and on the Mizzou front, you know, now the question becomes, look, I could argue, I had someone that sent me something about college athletics and, you know, said, look, they've ruined college athletics. A lot of people feel that way with NIL. My feeling is this is the landscape that we're dealing with right now. It's a bit of the Wild West. Some things have settled down, but there's no way in my mind that Mizzou could go from 0-18 in the SEC to what they did this year without, you know, the transfer portal and NIL. Now, though, we're in a situation, again, you got some kids that might stay. I mean, I think there's an assumption that Mark Mitchell stays. Cruz says that he's coming back. But some of these other kids might decide, like Aiden Shaw might say, hey, I want to go into the portal. So now you have this turnover situation again, and the coaching staff has to figure this out.
Yeah, and some players go into the portal just to see if any teams will bite, and then sometimes they come back.
Yeah.
You know, so it's really a matter of we need to regulate this thing. I mean, you can't just let players come and go and play for four different teams in their career. I know that coaches can do it, but, you know, players should be able to have some sort of guideline here. I mean, schools should have some sort of guideline. I mean, whether it's players can only move every 2 years or, you know, there has to be some sort of a restriction based on just moving around. But look, it is the world that we're in, and, you know, it does take a special coach, and I think Gates is one of those, who can pull a group together and get them all moving in one direction. And I do think that with a different draw, we might be talking differently about Missouri. I mean, we just saw it this year. They beat Florida. They beat Alabama. They're capable of dropping 100 on somebody, but it has to be the right matchup. And I thought that when I saw the Drake draw, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, that is,
everybody
like the
did.
Worst thing that could happen. Yeah.
I was kind of sitting back saying, look, and I knew how good Drake was. I had seen them in the MVC tournament here, but I thought, you know what? We're in the upper echelon of the SEC, and they're in the MVC, and that's going to end up being a difference maker. And it wasn't. By the way, on the SEC front, they get seven teams in the Sweet 16.
They do. You know, the Big Ten was really good. The Big Ten was undefeated there for a while. So those are the two power conferences. The ACC did not do all that well. Duke has got a chance to go all the way. But other than that, the ACC is pretty weak. I think the Missouri Valley Conference takes a hit from this NIL situation and portal situation because these schools don't have the deep pockets, so they're basically like farm teams for the big schools. I mean, how many Big Ten and SEC players come out of the Valley and do well? But you occasionally will get a Drake. You will get, you know, some other teams like Bradley who can do it. The problem is there's so much money tied up in this now, and you've got these big schools that the Missouri Valley Conference. I mean, what if Drake had not won Arch Madness? I bet you they don't get in. I mean, I'd like to think they would.
No, they probably don't.
But we said the same thing about Indiana State last year. And then what if they don't get in? A team that won 30 games during the regular season. So it's a little bit odd right now. You've got a heavy, heavy contingent of SEC and Big Tens. It makes for, you know, a lot of viewership. I mean, I think that mostly the networks probably enjoy the fact that all these big teams are still involved.
I think you're right about that. Let's get to the Cardinals. Tom Ackerman is here as we get closer to opening day. The decision over the last couple of days was the roster being finalized, and there was a lot of buzz about Victor Scott. Will he make it? Won't he make it? The fans, I think, were saying, look, this guy's had an incredible spring. How can you keep him off the roster? So in the end, they keep him on the roster. But what went down there, Tom, in your opinion?
Well, I think that, you know, he is the people's choice at center field. And I think that, you know, inside the Cardinals talked a lot about it and they were keeping an eye on it with the thought that if he does finish strong, they're going to make him the center fielder. You know, Cardinals fans right now are looking at this team and saying, what are we? I mean, is this a team that can win? Is this a team that's going to develop players only? No, it's neither. It's a team that's sort of in between. So I think fans were being vocal and saying, at least give us something. At least give us an exciting young player like Victor Scott to play center field. And quite honestly, Mark, he earned it. I mean, he was the best outfielder they had in spring training. He has shown absolutely all of his skills, and he's improved from 1 year to the next. So now he's going to get that shot. The Cardinals will have some flexibility out there. They can play Nootbaar in center. They can play Ciani in center if they have to. One curious move was that they had Ciani still on the team, though, as a fourth outfielder. So that knocks out Fermin and Barrero, who are competing for an infield-outfield spot. They're basically playing with no backup shortstop right now, except for Brendan Donovan, who will move all over the place. So they're going for big power hitters outside of Scott and a couple of others, they're going for the big thumpers, Baker, Burleson, Gorman coming off the bench, and then rolling the dice that, you know, Wynn will be okay at shortstop. They still have the backups in Memphis if they have to. But going back to Scott, I think it is exciting. He is a fun, fun talent. He's explosive. He's a big personality. And, you know, the Cardinals could use a little bit of that. They could use a little personality.
Absolutely. And does that mean, so, like, let's talk about Jose Fermin, because he really had a good spring. He worked hard. He's going to get up here, though, right?
Yeah, he'll be one of those players that you can go get if you need a second baseman, third baseman, shortstop. He can even play in the outfield. He's just your classic infielder who has a good bat, good contact hitter, and there's nothing really wrong with him necessarily. They just felt like a bigger impact would be to go with the other guys. Ciani is an excellent fielder that you could put in there in late innings, so I understand their thinking there. I might have gone with Barrero as an exciting talent who can play shortstop, outfield, and can hit a home run every so often. Fermin's not really a home run hitter. But, you know, it is what it is. The Cardinals' bench is stacked right now with power. I think the only interesting part of this from that standpoint is how do they give Gorman his at-bats? He's not the second baseman. That's Donovan. He'll play it sometimes. He's not the third baseman because they couldn't trade Arenado. He's not the primary DH, or is he? Or is it Burleson? Or is it Herrera? I mean, they're going to have to be very creative in how they get Nolan Gorman his at-bats.
What is the current status of Jordan Walker? I mean, 2 years ago, we're talking about this guy as being one of the next, you know, stars in the whole league, not just on the Cardinal, on the Cardinals, Tom. So what he was injured maybe a little bit a couple weeks ago, too. Where is Jordan Walker in all of this right now?
Well, I'm pretty impressed. In the short term, like right now, I'm impressed with how fast he came back from that injury, because that could have been bad. He stepped on a sprinkler head in right field, a la Mickey Mantle back in the day. This was in West Palm Beach. He wrenched his knee. He had inflammation around the knee. I was thinking worst-case scenario. But it's structurally no damage. So in very short order, probably 10 or 11 days, he was back on the field just to get himself back. And he actually stung the ball pretty well. He looked pretty good at the plate before that. I think there's a lot of expectation placed on him because he was their top prospect. I think that he was moved quickly to the outfield, a position that he wasn't accustomed to playing, and that might have affected a little bit. I think that his play at the plate, has been so up and down. He was, remember, moved to the minors to work on it and brought back up. And then, you know, he just hasn't been able to catch his stride yet. But he's so young. He's wise for a young guy. I think he's a student of the game for sure. I still think he has untapped power in that bat. And they will need him to be good. I mean, if the Cardinals are going to be good, I think their bullpen is good. I think their rotation's pretty good. I think that they just have to hit. If they hit a little bit last year, they're probably knocking on the door of the playoffs. Whereas this past year, they were horrendous offensively and didn't make it. I think that Walker, though, is a big part of this.
Yeah.
If Walker is good, they could be pretty decent. But everyone's going to have to be good in that lineup.
Let me make an analogy, and I'll go back to Mizzou real quick, because one of the things I said after the loss, Tom, was, look, it wasn't really too difficult to handicap some of this because they did stumble into the, you know, the end of the season and lost 4 of 6. I want to bring up Sonny Gray, because maybe Sonny Gray's working on some pitches, but what would there be a realistic expectation for the fans to say, hey, this guy's going to turn it around after a brutal spring?
Oof, yeah, I'm concerned about that a little bit. Now, I know that some are not. You know, I've heard some people on our station, and I've heard the Cardinals say that they trust Sonny Gray, but I don't like when a pitcher is throwing 89, 90 when he's accustomed to throwing 94. It means that he's got to basically take that fastball out of his arsenal. He can't blow that by people anymore. It's almost like, it's not this bad, but it's almost like Wainwright, when he didn't have the velocity anymore, he was getting shelled. I mean, I think Gray is a better pitcher at this stage than Wainwright was at the latter stage of his career. But to that end, Gray is going to have to be creative in throwing breaking balls, keeping hitters off balance with all kinds of movement and changing speeds. And you just have to hope that he can figure it out until he gets the velocity back. It's not anything more than he got a late start because he had a forearm tendon injury. And he had to have an injection, so everything's kind of a little bit late for him in terms of getting that velocity back. At least that's what he's saying. So it's definitely something to watch. Now, the good news is you have this guy in the minors right now, Michael.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
McGreevy, who was phenomenal in the spring, and I'm not saying that lightly. I mean, he was really, really good against big competition. So I'd be very curious to see if something doesn't go right with this rotation when they make that call for McGreevy.
I'll leave on this. Look, there's a lot of anxiety on the part of the fans. I've heard from fans across the country. You know, we all have friends who are deep, seated Cardinals fans, but there's a lot of people saying, I'm mad at Mo, I don't want to even watch the team. Obviously, exceeding expectations can turn that around, but there's a lot of sentiment here that needs to be turned around.
Yeah, so fans of the Cardinals are used to winning, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's not being spoiled, that's just the fact of life. They've won a lot of championships, they've always had good teams. You know, unless you experienced Cardinal baseball in the 70s, which was not a great era. Most of our lives have been great baseball. If you're my age, I turned 50 this year. My early memories are the 80s. And I was a fan of the team in the 80s. Ever since then, except for that brief period where the Brewery owned the team, you know, they have had a really good run. So, you know, fans are used to that. So they're upset when things don't go well, but they also like to be told what's going on. They want to be involved. They like to know that they have a say and that it's being communicated to them clearly. I think once Chaim Bloom has the ability to do that and takes over as a spokesman for this team, that will show a little bit more, because really what's happening here is what's going on at the lowest level of their organization. They are reshaping everything. You know, and on top of that, Cardinals fans have a lot of pride. Just like St. Louis, you know how we always defend our city, and when people start talking trash about St. Louis, we get upset, and after a while, we just sort of throw our hands up. That's how Cardinals fans are right now. They're tired of people saying, boy, your team, I don't know about all that. I mean, they're used to being National League royalty. I mean, we ran that division here in St. Louis forever. So to take a step back and being told that the Cardinals have one of the worst lineups in baseball, et cetera, really does not sit well with the team and so with fans. So they're going to point the finger, and I get it. I get it. And they're passionate. I just hope that they continue to understand it's our responsibility to explain, let them interact and vent, and then see if we can take this thing back to where it used to be.
Tom, I appreciate it. I ran a little long here. I would be remiss in my duties if I didn't give you at least, 45 or 60 seconds to rave on the Blues right now, because holy moly, that's been fun, right?
Dude, I could talk to you for an hour if I had to. The Blues, just real quick, are starting to. I don't want to get too excited here, but they're starting to remind me of 2019. Coaching change when things weren't going well, and now they just can't be stopped. And they've got that mix of youth and veteran leadership. They're playing out of their minds right now. They've won 6 in a row. Mark, they're the best team in the NHL since the Four Nations faceoff. 12-2-2 since that competition. this has been a remarkable run by the Blues. They're 4 points clear of the competition for the second wild card. They're actually 4 points behind Minnesota for the top wild card. If they get into the playoffs, I think it'll be a tough out.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. This is exciting, and you can kind of feel it right now, especially because maybe our other teams are potentially letting us down. Tom, it's great to have you on, of course, and I really appreciate it. Enjoy opening day.
Thank you, buddy.
We used
Good
to
talk
do these.
To you always.
Yeah, we used to do these things together. Remember, I'm old
we
enough
did.
To remember when Tom Ackerman and Mark Reardon hosted opening day coverage, but then I went to the FM. But I'll miss you.
And now we're FM. How about that?
I know. I've heard rumors to that effect. All right, Ackerman, we'll see you.
All right, man.